What's up, guys? You're listening to The Quest, a podcast that inspires founders and creators to seek eternal growth. I'm Justin Kahn, co-founder of Twitch and partner at Goat Capital. Every week, I sit down with icons and trailblazers from tech, Hollywood, sports, music, and more to uncover their human stories and bring you lessons in finding meaning and happiness beyond success. It's often easy to talk about winning, but I'm here to share the difficult stories that are often left out of the spotlight. I ask the questions nobody else asks, and you'll get the answers you won't hear anywhere else. I get a ton of Twitter DMs every day asking me something along the lines of, "Hey Justin, I want to be a great founder and I have this amazing idea in my head, but I don't really know how to start building it. What do I do?" I always tell young founders to just get started and ship something. Luckily, the days of needing to hire a designer or relying on VC funding just to get started are over with apps like Universe. Universe is not just any website builder. It's literally one of the easiest tools out there to customize your unique site that fits your personality. With this app, you don't need to spend hours sitting at a desk building your site. With their grid editor that easily lets you snap blocks into place, you can design and customize your site wherever you are and however you want, all from the palm of your hand. If you're feeling overwhelmed and don't know how to get started on your company, check out Universe and get started building today. We'll drop the link in the show notes. What's up, guys? It's Justin Kahn. You're listening to The Quest. And today, my guests are Adam Jackson and Gabe Luna Ostaseski, two friends of mine who have founded a decentralized platform called Braintrust, which is basically a blockchain-powered network for freelance talent, engineers, and designers, with the goal of empowering independent contractors everywhere to own their destiny. And I love that. I've been following along from the sidelines for a little while and really excited to have this conversation with them. I've known you guys for a while, right? Adam, I think we first met probably like 10 to 12 years ago when we were both building companies here in Silicon Valley, right?
It was a long time ago. The first time I met you, actually, we were also both on camera, except you were wearing the camera and we were playing poker in North Beach in the Justin TV days. I think it was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like probably 2007 is that's when I was running the camera. And remind me, like, what company were you working on then? You've started so many different companies like me. You've got founder ADD or something. You got to give us a quick run through.
Some more successful than others, to be very, very transparent. But at that time, I was working on my second company called DriverSide, which was an automotive marketplace connecting car owners and mechanics, almost like a Yelp for mechanics. And that was ultimately acquired by Advance Auto Parts. That was way back in the day, Web 2.
And since then, you've started a bunch of different companies, like mostly focused on marketplaces, right? Like there's been telehealth companies and other marketplaces. And now you're like in Web 3 market, but like give us a rundown on some of the other companies.
Yeah. Had another marketplace called Market Square that connected local shoppers on the internet with local stores, like local brick and mortar stores. That was acquired by Intuit. Spent a year there as a product manager, then did DriverSide, which was acquired by an auto parts store. Then in 2012, started Doctor On Demand with Dr. Phil, who's a well-known daytime TV guy. That was a hell of an experience. I was a CEO there for 4 years. We grew it from scratch into the country's largest telemedicine system. Not quite a marketplace, but still matching doctors and patients. In healthcare, nothing's really a marketplace because everyone's got their thumb on the price somehow. And then that grew into a giant healthcare company, and it was in need of more capable enterprise management hands. So my friend Bill Ferguson took over. And that allowed me to sort of go back to my first love, which is deep tech. That's when I got into blockchain full time. That's 2016. Was early in Ethereum, participated in the Binance crowd sale, bunch of other things participated in that went to zero. And then really got obsessed with this concept of tokens changing how people organize, essentially replacing shares of stock, replacing a corporate environment for, gathering resources and pointing resources in a certain direction. And so started an asset management firm along the way called Cambrian. And then we were looking into, we had an investment thesis that user-owned networks, Web3, would grow faster and be more valuable to their users than investor-owned networks. That was the premise. We tried to deploy capital against that. Didn't really find a lot of opportunities, found a lot of smart young entrepreneurs, but nothing to deploy into. So that's where Braintrust came from. We actually incubated Braintrust out of Cambrian, and Gabe and I teamed up, and the rest is history.
Gotcha. And I want to dive into that, but first we'll talk about Gabe, who is, I've also known for a long time. We've had a
really close mutual friend who I think first introduced us, but we're in the same YPO forum. So I've been seeing the behind the scenes for the last couple of years and hearing the behind the scenes of BrainTrust. And Gabe, like, tell me a little bit about your background, how you came to entrepreneurship. You know, what's the history?
Yes, I think I've been like unemployable since I was 18. That's when I kind of did my first company, then did a second company, which was called Modernize. It was essentially a marketplace for home services. So essentially on one side, you had homeowners that were trying to find roofers or painters or window companies, things like that. And on the other side, you had the kind of the home service professionals. So I was a co-founder of that company. And we actually bootstrapped it up to about $100 million in sales. And then it was acquired by a public company called Quinn Street. I joked after like maybe 2 weeks of like doing yoga and reading books and stuff, my wife was so annoyed with me. She was like, beat it, get out of the house and go and like do something. And so I started actually helping other two-sided marketplaces in Silicon Valley. So I helped Uber a little bit. I helped Thumbtack and Better Doctor. And I built a small venture fund around it with our friend Marcus. And so I've been, I would say like about 45 marketplaces across all different industries. I really fell in love with that business model of essentially bringing people together to transact in a trusted way. And so I got to see like the front lines of all these marketplaces, whether it was ride sharing or home services or insurance, things like that. And you start to see some patterns emerge. And like one of the patterns is most of these companies are really capital inefficient to get going. They take billions and billions of dollars to essentially subsidize one side of the network.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that they basically all have the same fundamental flaw. The dirty little secret is that all of these Web2 marketplaces essentially rely on fee extraction, right? In the form of a rake or a transaction fee. And they, you know, some of them take 15, 20%. Some of them take 45, 50%. And what that does is it really misaligns the incentives, and it also kind of kills the community and kills the NPS as these networks get to scale. And I actually got interested in crypto, and I bought like Bitcoin a long time ago, but then got reinterested in crypto. I think when the use, the non just pure financial use cases started to emerge in 2017, and found myself like reading white papers, right? And I'm like, something's different here, right? Like I'm like sitting down on the weekends and reading like crypto white papers. Maybe I should pay attention and keep pulling on this string. But I didn't have a really solid thesis of like, where does a non-technical person operate in this space? And then actually Adam and I were doing a bunch of due diligence and investing in deals together. And it's actually like, you know, my fund and Cambrian both seeded this concept for BrainTrust. And that's how we got going.
And so, yeah, I remember when you first started describing BrainTrust to me, I was like, why does that need to be crypto? Right? Like, I didn't get it. I was like, why should Upwork or whatever seems to work, right? Like people find talent on it. It works.
Yeah.
It's like such an easier application to build in a centralized way versus a decentralized way.
For sure.
And so I like didn't get it. And the thing that you said that really kind of made a light bulb turn on for me was that if you think equity is good, right? Like if you think equity is a good way to incentivize people where you distribute, like Silicon Valley, you know, you start a startup, you distribute to your hundreds of employees or whatever, some ownership in the company, and then they're incentivized to like give you their best ideas and work hard on the company and share in the success of it, then the idea of creating a token that represents the ownership of the protocol that's owned by all of you who make that marketplace, like the buyers and sellers who make that marketplace, you're creating an incentive that's much more broadly distributed. And then I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. You know, like, so it seems like that's been done really in the DeFi side and like crypto, but not very much in like real applications that normal people might, you know, interact with. What I like about what you're doing with BrainTrust is it's something I understand, right? Like some, you know, like I might use. So tell me, how did you guys come to like deciding what to apply this, you know, this technology onto? Like, why, how'd you get into this problem to solve?
This is all Adam. I just hitched my wagon. So I'm gonna like let him dig into this one.
It's good to have smarter friends.
It's funny. That's what I say about Gabe too. So one of us is right. So Justin, the way you frame that is actually really good. Let me zoom out for a second and talk about the real difference between tokens and equity, because the idea of a Web2 marketplace is a for-profit company in the middle that grows supply, grows demand, facilitates a trusted place to transact, i.e. they probably have, you know, invoices and reputation, right? And then they probably process the payment, right? That's the job of a Web2 marketplace. Everything from the very first one, eBay, all the way up to modern giants of DoorDash and Uber. What happens there is because they're for-profit entities, their fiduciary, their mission, very plainly stated, is to maximize revenue, maximize profit. Where does that revenue come from? Almost always in the form of extracting some percentage of the transactions they facilitate as a fee, right? Or the rake. And so those rakes can vary depending on category, right? The eBay rake is relatively low, but in matching people to people, two-sided people marketplaces like drivers and riders, dashers and consumers of food, or Upwork designers and, you know, clients, you're talking about a much higher rake. So the rake could be 20, 25, 40, 45%. If you're talking about consulting firms, it's even higher. And so what that does is it creates this misaligned incentive between the users who make their living on the network, i.e. the talent, and the clients too, right? And then the operator of the network who's trying to take as much of that value as possible. And so you end up with a spectrum of Web2 marketplaces, i.e. corporate marketplaces. On one end of the spectrum are marketplaces that probably add as much or more value to the ecosystem as they extract. I'll give an example of that would be Airbnb, right? Like Airbnbs, like they provide amazing services. It's an incredible application. There's tons of insurance and safety and all this cool stuff built in. And you don't see a lot of disintermediation with Airbnb, right? Like it's not like every time you get a host, they're like, hey, let's go around next time. You know, like let's cut out Airbnb. On the other end are marketplaces that extract more value than they provide. And you could argue DoorDash and Uber and some of the gig economy, certainly Upwork, are in this category. And then there's like everyone else is sort of in between, right? And so the big idea here was, what if you could replace that corporate for-profit matchmaker, the middleman, with essentially a public good, like in economic terms, we call public good, like a nonprofit essentially, that it, instead of a big corporation with tens of thousands of employees, that, you know, is generally like a big Silicon Valley waste machine that will never generate a profit no matter how much revenue it makes, you know, instead just replace that with smart contracts, which are immutable. They're on the blockchain. They can be upgraded and changed through voting of the token holders. And it's totally transparent. If you ever want to know what the rules are, just look at the smart contract, right? And so that the idea here is to replace that big corporate waste machine with smart contracts. What does that allow you to do? Bring the rake as close to zero as possible, which, okay, that's bad for the corporate middleman, right? But that there is no corporate middleman in this scenario. Now it's just the users who make their living on the network who get to keep more of the value, right? So instead of giving 25, 30, 35% to Upwork or Fiverr, if you're a designer or developer, you can come to Braintrust and make 100%. Our rake on talent is zero. Our rake to clients is a flat 10%, which is just meant to, like, you know, cover the costs of onboarding a Goldman Sachs or a Nike or whatever. And so it's a classic Web3. This is not just Braintrust, right? Like, I mean, we certainly didn't invent this. I mean, Web3 is all about replacing extractionary middlemen with smart contracts and software, smart software that can serve as grow supply, grow demand, facilitate transactions, and build reputation, right, on chain.
Yeah.
And so that's what the user-owned economy is all about.
Yeah. Just a quick tag on to that, which I think is great. Like there was a seminal piece back in 2013 by Bill Gurley, like famous investor for Benchmark, you know, led the Uber round. And it was an article called A Rake Too Far. And it basically examined like the power of these marketplaces, but also like how to think about a rake in the transaction. He had this great quote and says, there's a big difference between the value that you can extract versus what you should extract. And like that was written back in 2013. And like we're actually seeing that come to fruition now, which is basically as the rake approaches zero,
right?
That is the optimal pricing strategy because it attracts both supply and demand to the network and is quite disruptive to this like Web2 model that relies on this 20 to 50% rake out of the transaction in the middle.
Yeah, I had this idea, like, I think it was around 2014. There was all this driver dissatisfaction with Uber, right? That's just starting to be like, more, they started to like ramp up fees. And like, it was, you know, but first it was like a really great job for drivers and all these people bought cars to drive on Uber, and then they were like, we need to make more money. And so like the deal got worse over time, right? So then people were upset, and I was like, someone should create, I had this idea of creating a nonprofit Uber, like a open Uber where like anyone could sign up. Like running the infrastructure of Uber, right, is pretty simple. Like it's an app, you open it, passes you to like nearby rides, you know, and then they get to accept and then they just drive you somewhere. And it was like, you could just make this as a nonprofit where the drivers, maybe they paid like $20 a month or something just to be on this network, and it was entirely free, right? And you know, if that was imagined in today, it might be a, it would probably be more of a Web3 idea. But it seems like the way the web has evolved has been, you have all these people who are like friends of ours, you know, maybe you and me or all three of us who were at the right place at the right time and kind of worked hard to do it. But then now they've created this like company that can like rent seek this market forever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, and that doesn't seem like the way you want the internet to evolve.
Yeah.
Gabe and I work where we felt we were uniquely suited to execute this idea because we've been part of the problem for so long. Gabe was early advisor at Uber and you know, what, 10 or 15 other marketplaces. I've started 5 and invested in 50 more. And we were like well positioned to understand how divergent incentives. It's really just bad for business. You know, like it, if one or more sides of your marketplace hates the operator, like, of course, in the Dash or in the gig economy, it's actually like morally reprehensible. Like, I think the big innovation of the gig economy is that they figured out how to get people to work at 1/3 federal minimum wage levels and kind of not know they're doing it because you factor in gas and maintenance, all this stuff, and no benefits. And like, it's not just morally reprehensible. It's just bad for business, right? If you have your customers hate you, it's disruption time, right? And I just feel like these Web2 marketplaces were this like calamity kind of caused by tech. And like, I don't think the government's going to fix it. I mean, they've tried.
No.
I think tech should fix this. And this is like, you know, part of our modest attempt to help that.
So the, you know, like with a DoorDash or an Uber or Airbnb, like a lot of these companies raise a huge amount of capital to solve the cold start problem, right? So they like, Uber had to sign up, you know, at cost of hundreds of dollars per driver. They're signing up like millions of drivers, right?
Yeah, for sure.
How do you solve that in the Web3 way?
Yeah, I'll happily touch on this one. So what you find is like oftentimes the new things don't look like the old things, right? And so like there's a couple of new innovations here that on the outside may seem silly, at least in the beginning, right? Like when we had to do 120 pitch meetings to raise the seed round for this idea. A lot of people kind of poo-pooed this, but
you guys had to do 120 seat pitch meetings.
Oh yeah, it was awful, man. We were laughed out of offices in Sand Hill. People literally said, if you want to start an Indian restaurant, we'll fund you. Just don't do this idea. a couple of years later, it's quite different. So one of them is that the concept of a programmable incentive, what's really interesting about that is that you can essentially tie the incentive to what helps the network to grow or be more sustainable. And so in our case, I'll use us as an example. Like in our case, essentially our job is to essentially match supply and demand, clients that are looking to hire talent and obviously talent that can be hired. And so the first thing is basically anyone can show up and they can get a referral code and they can invite companies and they can invite talent. And when those companies transact, when they actually like have money that flows through the platform, the software actually pays out Btrust, which is our native token, 1 to sometimes 2% of what the transaction amount is. So like, for instance, like Nestle was invited by a connector. Porsche was invited by a connector.
So like some random person who is like in the Braintrust community got Porsche as a customer. Like how does that, most people would think that's unbelievable.
It's people monetizing their connections, right? It's not like, oh, I'm going to show up and like randomly do enterprise sales for this random crypto project and earn tokens that aren't even on mainnet. It's not like that, right? It's like the way we seeded the supply is I invited the first 100 engineers and designers were just folks I've worked with, right? Yeah, I've been CTO twice, like just folks in my community. They invited the next 1,000. Those people invited the next 5,000. And those folks earn Btrust for referring talent that, you know, that end up becoming approved, right? They get 100 tokens if the person becomes approved, and then they get a percentage of what they earn if they start transacting. On the client side, like Gabe set up our our initial salespeople were me and Gabe. And then we hired like two real salespeople. And then the rest was like, hey, well, you know, you can earn ownership and control of this network if you bring your client book on. And so like, it was the person who knew there was a need at Porsche and he came on. And so you end up spinning up these like little independent companies, right? That are just groups of people that, you know, are completely unaffiliated with us, right? They're not employees of ours, whatever. They're just, you know, they come in and they're like, hey, here's a way to rebuild how talent and client are matched. And like, I'll get some control of the network for doing so.
Yeah. And we still literally don't spend a penny on paid marketing on either side. And we have a network that's scaling. That's quite a different model than like this traditional kind of, we call them like Silicon Valley waste machines.
Yeah. And so you just went exchange offering, right? Like you were listed on Coinbase in the last couple of weeks. And so BTrust is liquid, it's worth something, you know, they can exchange it for fiat or other cryptos. But like for a long period of time, you started this project like 3 years ago, right? So there's a long period of time where that was not possible. And so what was the incentive, or how did you build a confidence in the various people who were participating in the community that this was going to be worth something eventually, or it was like worth doing at all?
Yeah, this is probably the most important point about this network and in a lot of Web3 networks. The token in our system, it's very clear, like from the beginning, has been what's called a utility token. So it's an incentive and governance mechanism. It's one token, one vote. We actually forked the Compound Protocol's governance system because they did a great job on it. It was like, why reinvent the wheel? And then there's other uses for the token. You can redeem them in our academy. Someone in our community built an academy. It's different, not our core team, where you can learn about new things and upskill. There's also some bid staking features that have been in development, where like you can use some tokens that you earn to stand out in a competitive bidding environment and thus win jobs more frequently if you're a freelancer. But the main, like kind of the initial use case was like, when you earn tokens, you earn control in this network. It is not, you know, not when we launched, now it's decentralized. I mean, I guess anything can happen now, but it has never been a profit return token. Like it's never been like a financial instrument that returns dividends or pays you rewards, you know, anything like that. That would make speculators just like try to get the token just for financial reasons. And that was never our intention. Whoever buys the token now, we have no control over, right? It doesn't matter. But it's always been one token, one vote. And so people for years now have been, you know, helping us govern and, you know, moving the product roadmap and suggesting new rules and enforcing which categories the marketplace operates in, all through token-based governance. And I mean, like skeptics will scoff at this point and say like, oh, come on, like corporate governance doesn't matter, right? Like nobody votes their Facebook shares. And it's like, well, it wouldn't matter if you voted your Facebook shares. Only one person's vote in that network matters, because that's how that's set up. We are set up differently. And so when you're running a marketplace where you make your living, you actually care quite a lot about the rules, right? I'll give you an example. I mean, at gig marketplace DoorDash in 2019, like this New York Times did a huge story on this. They rolled out a tipping feature where consumers could tip their Dasher if they're happy with the service. And then DoorDash decided, you know what, we're going to book all the 2019 tips as revenue. We're just going to keep it. And they didn't pay out a single tip. It was a total fucking evil move. But it was not illegal, right? It was like, it's part of their terms. On Great Trust, that wouldn't have even been possible, right? Like you'd have to like first vote for a tipping feature, and then it would be written into a smart contract that the tout gets it. And then if like someone wanted to steal that, they'd have to like get 51% of the network and attack it. And then everyone would leave. There'd be no more tips, right? And so, you know, it's just like, this is just a better way to build. And people can certainly buy tokens, and you know, you're essentially buying influence at that point. The price, the US dollar value of our token, is not relevant to the functionality of the network.
And you could still, I mean, everybody is earning tokens for participating in the community. So like, even if you don't have money to participate in it up front or buy it, you're not buying tokens, you can earn some part, you know, say in what goes on.
Our whole thesis in the beginning was like, people's on-ramp into crypto is actually going to be earning it, not buying it. And what's been really interesting is we've had thousands and thousands of contributors from 147 countries, I think the last time I saw, doing everything from like screening. There's a really intensive vetting process that people have to go through to get to be an approved talent. All of that screening is done by community members, and they earn BTrust for doing that. Orbiting right? Like there's only, I think there's been one dispute or two disputes in the whole history of the company, but like there's arbiters of those disputes and those people are paid in B-Trust as well. So you essentially use B-Trust as a token incentive to get community members to be really active and also to perform functions that the network needs to either grow or you know, maintain stability.
And consequently, like the end result of that is like your company is dozens of people, right? And you know, what's the impact that you guys have achieved?
Yeah, so I think there's like four or five core teams all over the place. I think one of those teams has
six core teams.
Yeah.
None of which have more than maybe 12 employees or something.
Yeah.
Two of the core teams are like salespeople, essentially. Like they know where the demand is. So they bring in those, we call each one a node on the network. They bring in business from the enterprise side. We have two engineering teams in Europe. And then Freelance Labs is the one of the core teams Gabe and I have worked for. It's funny, like we don't have any engineers on our core team. We're like the token economics people and we do some marketing. All engineering is done by other teams based in Europe, actually.
Yeah. So you end up with the build, being able to build like a global network in a really, really capital efficient way. And so I think, that part's been super, super interesting for us to see. It's basically a new model for how you build, how you solve the bootstrap problem in marketplaces, getting enough people to show up, and also like how you continue to build the network without having to hire armies of people or spend billions of dollars on Google AdWords.
And the reason, like, it's basically that you have an engaged community. I mean, basically people are working for tokens, right? Like to contribute to this, you know, this network because they believe in it and because they think that these tokens will be worth something in the future, potentially.
We've always guessed about this part. And now we actually have some early data.
Yeah.
So we've been, you know, the token's been liquid for almost exactly a month on Coinbase. There has been unbelievably little selling from our community members. Like, you know, we could see the wallets, right? There's been certainly plenty of like speculators trading in and out, but what our community loves about this token is that it allows them to actually control the marketplace where they make their living. Right. And so we have this like surprisingly active governance channel on Discord. And then a snapshot system where we're seeing like a new proposal basically every day about how to, you know, upgrade the network, change the rules. And these are people that are, they're active talent contributors on the platform and they care about the environment, right? They care, they make their living here now on Brain Trust and they care quite a lot about the ecosystem. So, I mean, we had a debate. It was this morning, actually, we're having a debate about whether we should change the software so unvested tokens can still vote. So they're like, look, we don't, because right now only vested tokens can vote, right? That's kind of a typical thing in blockchain.
Yeah.
And we're like, now we have to change the architecture of the system. And they're like, look, we want to vote our unvested tokens. Like we want our voices louder. It's not so they could rip them out and sell them, right? And so we've had a month now and had barely anybody withdraw off the platform and sell. So we kind of knew that would be the case in the long run. We're really surprised that it's taken form this quickly.
I hope you guys are enjoying the conversation so far. On this podcast, I always preach about practicing gratitude. And today, I'm thankful for our sponsor, Cash App, in making the quest possible. Cash App is the best way to spend, save, and invest in stocks, as well as buy cryptocurrencies in a way that's easy to understand and accessible for everyone. From payments to banking to investing, you can do it all on one platform. It's available for download on the App Store and Google Play, so you better go get that $10 your friend owes you from 2 years ago. Now let's get back to the episode.
You know, we've been in the land of, you know, a lot of your audience are builders, creators, right? Like, and we've been kind of in this world of the theoretical or the mechanics of how it works. And I thought I could take a second to just talk about like actually some of the outcomes. For a long time, this concept has lived in the world of blog articles, right? Theories about how this would work or theories about would it work or not. And like, I think what we're seeing right now is like, this is one of the first mainstream projects that's gotten to a real significant scale. And again, we're still pretty early, but I thought I'd share some of the metrics. So we currently have 82,991 registered talent accounts. So again, with zero paid advertising. There's 7,600 active non-zero wallets, people across 157 countries. currently 490 customers, and just over 75 of the Fortune 1000 companies, including Porsche, Nestle, Bank of America, and Goldman Sachs, many others. It's about 1,500 jobs that have been posted on the platform. The average job size, this one's a really interesting one, which is our belief when we started was that, like, when you drop the fee to zero, you enable a whole kind of new, larger transactions. Like when Upwork went public, their average job size was just over $600. The Braintrust average job size right now is $67,000.
So it's just a different type of customer and different type of project.
Yeah. And when you drop the fee to zero, right, there's no incentive to go off platform. So what it does is it enables a whole new class of transactions that have never hit these other labor marketplaces because the fee is so high that once jobs get big enough, everyone's like, yeah, let's just take it off platform. And then you kind of lose the whole like trust and, you know.
We actually built a negative incentive to go off platform because when you complete jobs on the platform and get good ratings, you actually earn more tokens. And so you have a 0% rake on the talent and the talent earned tokens just for being good contributors, right? So that's actually a negative take rate.
But the companies still pay that 10% rake, right? So it is like there is a minimal cost to you transacting on the platform that like one side sees.
To levy that cost on the client side for a few reasons. One, they're used to paying like a 50% rake or more if they like contract with Accenture for Java developers or if they go to TopTal or whatever. TopTal has a huge rake. And so bringing it down to 10%, they're like, oh, cool, we're already ahead. More importantly, we live in a talent-constrained world. Yep. And so they're going to go wherever the best talent are, and the best talents are going to come where they can own and control the platform and not pay any fees, right? So the chicken and egg was really simple on that. And it made all the sense in the world to have no rake on the talent, 10% on the clients, and start there.
Gotcha.
I think like what we've seen is pretty interesting growth, right? I think since inception, we've averaged 26% month over month growth with no marketing spend.
That's amazing. One question I had was like, what's the future interaction of the Braintrust company or like your guys' company and this protocol? Like eventually, are you even operating it? Do you like fade into the background or like you're at the frontier of these Web3 companies? So I'm curious what you think the future looks like for you.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there's kind of six companies that have been involved since inception. Gabe and I just work for one of them.
Yeah.
Those companies, they have various characteristics. Some of them are, I mean, they're all for profit, right? But like some of them are sales companies, marketing companies, some are engineering companies. And so, you know, we all sort of banded together, us six, and then like hundreds more individuals and small agencies around the world who've made small contributions. We all benefit from a lively and successful and growing Braintrust. And that just means lots of great clients spending more and more money on hiring talent, right? And so, you know, the more vibrant this community becomes, the better it is for people who build software or design UI or do freelance product management work. You know, and then like on a personal level, I mean, I'll speak for myself, obviously, like the reason, you know, I wrote the initial token economic paper for Braintrust before we picked a category was I just deeply believe that user-owned networks are better for everybody, right? They're better for clients. They're better for talent. They're better for supply and demand. And I think having transparent economics, transparent governance keeps incentives aligned longer. And like, I just wanted to prove this was a better way than all the Web2 stuff I've done basically my entire career. And so, you know, we're well on our way of proving that, but that's kind of what personally motivates me here.
One of the things that I think is really interesting about platforms and marketplaces like Braintrust or applications is like, there's been this trend in Web 2, which was like Web 1 was very open, right? Like anyone could do anything. There was very interoperable based on like open standards. And then when we had this wave of Web 2 companies, they started that way. And then they eventually like all closed off, you know, like Twitter being the probably quintessential example, which started very open. Anyone could create a client, you know, take Twitter data. And then they realized that was what was really valuable. And they started to close off that access and like made Twitter this closed network. And now you have to use the Twitter client. You can use other clients, but they're kind of hamstrung. They've like re-centralized everything, right? And now with Web3, it's open. It's all smart contracts that like any wallet could interact with. like anyone can create anything on top of Brain Trust. Like someone's already created some sort of upskilling academy where they teach people things. And I'm sure that's something that, like, you guys didn't think of when you first started it. Is that part of the network? Do you think people will do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the ways that we've referred to this project is kind of like a, we call it like a protocol for work. So if you think about it at a macro level, like if and when the network continues to be successful, what it can be is essentially the protocol that powers all internet work. And so then you start to think like, okay, well, what are the dimensions of that, right? Well, there's like reputation, there's payments, there's so many components to our work that we now do online, that this kind of fundamental protocol right now that essentially matches supply and demand, handles all the global payments and taxes and all that level of things. If you start building on top of that, what it can become is not only a bunch more categories, but also it has the potential for the community to think of things that haven't even been thought of yet. And I think that's actually the most interesting and exciting thing about this, is that the shift is, as an entrepreneur, the shift is from controlling to enrolling. And that's like one that was a big shift for me, right? As an entrepreneur, like I was used to building something and controlling every single aspect of it. And that was like how you did it in Web 2. Like you control every single concept. And I think that the big shift that I've had to make is like this shift to like empowerment and enrolling people and really like having people get involved for the right reasons and want to build on top of what we've built and not constraining them artificially. Literally anyone that owns tokens can propose anything that they want. And, you know, and Adam and I don't control that. And that's a feature, not a bug.
So what's the translation between like governance proposals and like actual implementation? Cause it's like, you know, I can understand theoretically everyone can vote and there's this governance system where people can propose something, but someone's going to have to go implement. Like if it's a new piece of the software or something, someone's going to have to implement it. And then you're going to have to verify that like, yeah, you know, matches up with whatever people voted on or whatever. Like, how does that actually work from a practical standpoint?
This is the part I really love about Web3 versus the old way. So, I mean, Justin, you're a product guy, right? I mean, the classic way of deciding what to build, right, is, you know, you talk to your users, you do some cost benefit analysis, and then, you know, the company ends up, you know, the management team ends up kind of deciding what to build. We have only so many resources, so we're going to make our roadmap for the year, and like, here's how it looks, right? It's very top down, and maybe there's some user testing involved, but yeah, not really. And so when employees have good ideas or customers have good ideas, it's always like, yeah, we hear you, right? But like, we decided a year ago what we're going to build. So yeah, here it is. And, you know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating having been on both sides of that equation, right? It's very frustrating to, you know, be building things that you're not quite sure people want and vice versa. So the model here is people can propose anything they want, right? I mean, they could propose, you should build a spaceship and run Brain Trust satellites, right? Cool. How do you pay for that, right? Where's that money come from? Who's going to implement? And so that's where the rubber meets the road, right? And there's dozens and dozens, maybe close to 100 now, people who've contributed either code or UX or design to the Brain Trust platform. Some very active contributors and some that have just minorly contributed. But then those folks, you know, can either do it for fun, right? Like they could just do it pro bono, well, almost like an open source project. And we've had some of those, but more commonly, like they're getting paid something, right? And so, I mean, that's why we raised the little bit of money we did, is so we can kind of bootstrap development of the platform. And so those folks got paid cash, and now many contributors get paid in Brain Trust token. So the project has a treasury, and the treasury funds, you know, are largely dictated by how token holders vote. And so you can vote to pass an idea that might be, you know, a pretty heavy lift on development, but then, you know, you've got to form this coalition of like how to get it done. Maybe it's, you know, six people for 6 months, and that's going to cost $200,000. And how should that be paid for? And that's what the treasury's for, right? And so maybe they'll get a grant. Maybe a grant will be proposed and that'll pass or whatever. Or maybe some of the core teams that have tokens for their contributions, maybe they want to help fund it. So initially, like the criticism there would be like, and it sounds a little messy and slow, but like at the end of the day, like it kind of makes sure that only things that really matter to people and can get the votes from people who've earned the token. And the only way really to get the token is to help us out over the years. That kind of decides the roadmap, right? So it's very easy to say, look, let's just see what the community wants and see if there's anyone willing to build it, right? If some engineer is willing to build it on his own time, even better, right? So it's a cool experiment. I'm sure there'll be things that suck about it, like that we wish we were back to the old way, but I'm excited about how we're started off.
So in this case, like governance actually means roadmap as well. And so people are actually like saying, this is what we want feature-wise, and then that's being implemented based on like the desires of the community.
Yeah, 100%. That's really cool to watch. Like, it's really interesting to watch. You see people like take different stances on these things and it build coalitions with each other to talk about like the impact or the externalities of this decision or that decision. So like somebody will propose something and people like really, they have a, it's not just a sense of ownership, like they are owners. And so they debate these things fiercely. And that's, it's so cool to watch amongst a distributed network of people that we've never met.
Yeah.
That are like helping to shape the future of this protocol.
So when you started though, like you guys had a concept of what the core parts of the protocol should be, right? So like,
yeah,
it started off as like Adam and Gabe roadmap, right? And then like, is it 100% community roadmap now, or is it like less than 100%? Like, and how did you decide to switch over?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually important that your centralized roadmap is completed and shipped more or less like before you hit mainnet and distribute the token. And so pretty much everything we imagined building had been built and shipped by the time, you know, we hit mainnet on September 1st. And so now it's vast, I wouldn't say 100%, but like majority community influenced roadmap at this point.
Amazing. And you know, you started off with this centralized implementation, right? And then moved to decentralization. Before you hit mainnet, were you like fully decentralized, or are you in the broad process of like fully decentralizing?
Yeah, you want to hit mainnet when you're already decentralized. So the easy part for us was like, you know, most projects have one core team. Like you have like Uniswap and Uniswap Labs, right? And then Filecoin as protocol labs.
Yeah.
You know, so there's advantages to that, right? But it could make the decentralization argument difficult. For us, there was always these kind of six companies from the beginning. And we all coordinated, like we all had the same mission. So like it feels like we're all on the same team, but like we're not, right? The companies do other things too. And we don't control each other. Me and Gabe only own one of those companies, not the other five. So the other piece of decentralization is like actually having users involved and earning tokens and using them. Like we've been doing that at Robston for years. So, the theory of testnet. And so when we kind of flipped the switch and got on mainnet, like it didn't feel very different, right? It's like we kind of been doing it for a while.
And when you set up these six companies, how did that come to be? Like,
we were just like, hey, here's the mission. You want to join us? And, you know, we actually had like one of our sales guys actually quit and set up his own company. So that's one of the nodes. So, you know, he's like, look, I think I could do better on my own. He's a great guy and he's been super helpful. And another node is run by one of our super connectors who's just like, hey, I'm just going to, you know, formalize this. Another one came to us just through, you know, we just feel like people with a similar mission.
Yeah. Incredible. Okay. So what's the future of Brain Trust? And more broadly, like, do you think that you guys are just one of many, like this is going to happen for every kind of like Web2 application that you see out there?
It's a great question. I mean, it's always hard to kind of predict what the future looks like, but I think it looks a lot more clear now than it did last year. And certainly from 2018, like, or when we kind of like raised the seed round, there was nothing that anyone could point to that said like, here's an actual implementation of this idea that's actually has any users or any transaction volume. And I think what's really interesting about this state right now is that it's at this really cool inflection point. And that inflection point, I think, is there's three parts to it. Crypto has achieved a level of adoption that it's now like not crazy for someone to quit a job in Silicon Valley and go and work in crypto, right? So like it's now attracting like talent that are coming out of Silicon Valley, but it's like coming out of high growth startups that are now thinking about like, what do they want to do for the next 5 or 10 years? And so you've seen the maturity of the space. I think the second thing is that you've seen capital flow into the space, which then also attracts developers and entrepreneurs. And then I think the third part is there's starting to emerge some real use cases, right? Like you could say Filecoin, you know, Uniswap, Braintrust. Like these are projects that are real use cases solving real problems and that are operating in a decentralized way and doing it not just like as a theory, but actually doing it better than the incumbent. And so I think that the convergence of those three things creates this really interesting period of time right now where you attract capital, talent, and people that want to build.
I also think, Justin, like just to put this into more broad kind of technology generations of innovation and disruption, SaaS like completely changed the world, right? It like upended on-prem, right? You would never buy a license for $1 million again. You would just pay Salesforce, you know, probably much more than that every month until and then get locked into their ecosystem and wish you had on-prem again. And then, you know, mobile totally unlocked, you know, this whole new opportunity that, you know, so you're not tethered to a computer anymore. And those technological innovations just created these massive wealth creation events and changed how business works, more importantly, right? And so if you can have a network that is being overly extracted from, like, I think the gig economy is an excellent example. I think talent matching knowledge workers with clients is another example of mass value extraction compared to the value they're providing. Web3 networks inevitably will replace those, right? Like your margin is my opportunity. Well, blockchain's the bottom of that barrel.
Yeah.
Right? And so having driver networks in the gig economy, driver rider networks, exactly what you surmised 10 years ago, like it, but now I think you have to have a token to power those things, right? To be the real liquid incentive and governance mechanism in the middle. So like Braintrust is just bitten off this small quarter. I mean, IT outsourcing is a $1.5 trillion annual part of the economy. So it's a giant abyss of GSV. Like this will inevitably happen in all two-sided human marketplaces, whether it's gigs or knowledge workers.
I always love that that quote you said. It's like this last era was software, software eating the world, and the next generation is blockchain eating the middleman.
Yeah, I think something that's interesting about Braintrust is that if it really is this open protocol, you can grow the market from what's traditionally considered freelancer or traditionally what Upwork was able to tackle, right? Because like you said, Upwork, like people don't want to pay the tax. But if it goes down to zero or close to zero, then you know, people will stay on the platform and then maybe that attracts like higher skilled talent. And then you have, you know, to do bigger jobs or have that be the, you know, means of their employment, primary employment. And then you can replace, like you have all these recruiters out there, right? Who are charging like 30% of like someone's salary because they are like in the middle and they like know the right person or they're like connected. And, you know, that's a huge market that you can probably grow into.
We're actually seeing recruiters already come onto the platform as connectors. And yeah, you know, their mentality, it hasn't happened in mass yet, but we're seeing it. And their mentality is, well, we know this thing goes to zero eventually. So why not monetize our connections here and earn ownership and control in this network through the token in an ongoing basis, right? And basically just using their referral code to make these connections and that's the end of it, right? They're not happy. It's not as high touch. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. It was never the intention for Braintrust to completely disrupt recruiting, but it looks like that'll be one of the side effects.
So watching you guys actually has inspired me. Like we've talked about it, you know, I haven't really announced anything yet, but it inspired me to like think about how can you use this type of decentralization to create like something that's better for the world. And so I'm working on a project and, you know, for people out there who want to work on something, I'll throw a link or something. They can find out more about it below. But what would you say for young people who are like out there, they want to like build something in this world, like where should they get started figuring out what they should build or leaping into Web3?
Yeah. So my own take on that, as I've answered this question for family members or friends or you know, given talks and mentorship, is that this space it's so wide that you have to find some thread that you really find interesting and compelling to like drill into. And so it's not only wide, but it's constantly changing. So it's hard to be a generalist in this area. Like Adam and I really narrowed in on this idea of like user-owned marketplaces or networks, right? And like, frankly, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to all the other stuff that's going on. because it's too much to swallow. And so there's so much innovation going on in every category within crypto, from decentralized finance to gaming, art, you know, music, you know, labor networks. There's so many, there's so much going on that I would advise people to like find what they love and find what they're interested in. I can guarantee like someone is either working on that or thinking about it, and like just go and work with some of these teams. They're really small teams and like everyone's happy to have extra capable hands. I would always say like, how much would you pay for the experience of like being on the front lines and seeing how these networks develop? I think that's honestly like the best way to learn is like find a great team working on a problem that really interests you, and then just like just help, and the opportunities will kind of take care of themselves.
I mean, blockchain technology is going to touch every sector of the economy. So whether it's art or music or e-commerce or money, DeFi, whatever, it's going to touch all of them. So just pick the one that you're most excited about. I mean, Justin, the category you're picked, and I won't say what it is because I imagine you haven't announced anything yet, but it's a category I'm super passionate in as well. And I think what you're embarking on is super incredible. And so, yeah, just like pick something that gets you fired up, because that's the only thing that's going to get you through the slog at the end of the day. It's just, you know, being fired up about the mission.
Great advice for any entrepreneur. Amazing. Well, any final thoughts? I feel like this is a great combo. I'm excited for where you guys are building, where it's going to go over the next years and decades. Like I can imagine that this is like, you know, well beyond the two of you running this or like any company working. This can be like, this could be a protocol by which all these people are transacting in the world. And I think that's one of the exciting things about Web3.
Absolutely, man. Well, thank you so much for having us on. It's you know, it's really a lot of fun to talk about the progress here. And let me say, like, this thing has already sailed past Gabe and I. I mean, it did probably a year ago, logistically, and like a month ago, realistically. And that's the heartening part, is like to see all these people we've never met before that we don't know, you know, really fired up about the direction of the protocol and bringing more and more value to Braintrust and to crypto in general. Now we're finally on mainnet, like the kind of journey really just started.
Amazing. Congrats. All right. Well, Braintrust to the moon. And everyone should go check out the project at braintrust.com, right?
Yeah. Great. Thanks so much for having us on, man. This was super fun.
Thank you.
All right, guys. That was the conversation. I hope you all enjoyed it. If you like this episode, drop us a rating and comment on iTunes. And you can check out all my other content at justincon.com. I will see you all next week.